Hey there, and welcome to this week's episode of Lost Origins, your number one radio show for all things ancient mystery, alternative historical theory, and lost civilizations. Make sure that you guys check us out online at lost-origins.com and sign up for that free newsletter. We're going to be rolling out perks, merchandise, contests for anyone who signs up for that, so make sure that you get in on that now. You guys can also connect with us on social media. We're on almost every platform, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode or an article from your friends here at Lost Origins. This week's episode is brought to you by our friends over at Inner Traditions and Baron Company. Inner Traditions has been publishing books on esoteric philosophy, New Age spirituality, and alternative health for well over 40 years. So visit innertraditions.com to learn more about their books, their authors. You can sign up for catalogs, coupons, and special offers. All right, well, this week's episode is going to be absolutely mind-blowing. Today, we are going to be chatting with none other than Giorgio Tsoukalos. Giorgio is one of the most well-known proponents for the ancient astronaut theory, and he has appeared in several documentaries and several television series, the most well-known obviously being Ancient Aliens. Today, we're going to be discussing his views on the ancient astronaut theory, his research surrounding these theories, as well as some upcoming events and news surrounding the show. All that and more coming up right after the break. All right, ladies and gentlemen, and we are back. I cannot even begin to explain how excited I am for this week's show. Today, we are joined by none other than Giorgio Tsoukalos. Giorgio is the chairman and co-founder of Legendary Times Magazine, which features articles from Eric Van Daniken, David Childress, Robert Bouval, and many others surrounding the topic of ancient astronauts and ancient mysteries. Giorgio is also the director of Eric Van Daniken's Center for Ancient Astronaut Research, and he has appeared on the Travel Channel, the History Channel, Sci-Fi, Nat Geo, you name it, he's been on it. And he's also the host of In Search of Aliens and is the consulting producer and featured expert of everyone's favorite, Ancient Aliens. So it is my outstanding pleasure to welcome Giorgio Tsoukalos to this week's episode of Lost Origin. Giorgio, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me on, and I can't wait to answer some of your questions.
I think we're going to have an awesome conversation. We had several of our listeners and readers write in with questions, so we're going to get into those as well. Before we start talking about all things ancient astronaut, Giorgio, can you share a little bit about your background with us? You know, how did you become one of the leading researchers within the ancient astronaut theory?
So this was something that actually goes back all the way to when I was a little kid, when these types of conversations were pretty much dinner table conversations whenever my grandma would be over visiting from Austria. And so sometimes my nighttime or bedtime stories would not be, you know, ordinary fairy tales, but they would be, you know, stories about Atlantis and the ancient astronaut theory and things like that. So even though my grandma was a devout a Catholic, she was still very open-minded, which for the time was, you know, something a little bit different, because you either were a devout Christian or a Catholic, or you were not. And so these ideas at the time were not so compatible. But to my grandmother, she always thought, well, why not? Because wouldn't that mean that all of creation is way more magnificent if the ideas of extraterrestrials turn out to be the truth?
Sure.
And so she was always very interested in the in ancient mysteries and alternative histories and things like that. And so growing up, I was in Switzerland, And Eric von Däniken is in Switzerland too, and one thing led to the other. I became his friend and his colleague, and today we publish a magazine together called Legendary Times.
Very cool. Tell me a little bit about working with Eric von Däniken. I mean, obviously, he is, you know, kind of what started it all with Chariots of the Gods. What is it like working with him? I'm sure it's just mind-blowing. And, you know, how long did it take you from, you know, beginning your that relationship to where you guys are now as peers?
Well, I've known Eric now for over 25 years, quite a while. And, you know, it's like being around a light bulb, a dynamo. He's just full of energy, and whoever meets him for the first time is blown away by his energy that he not only projects when you hear him on the radio or when you see him on TV, but in real life, it's even more so. And, you know, a lot of people say, man, this guy, he can't keep going like this because it's too much. He's too energetic. And I'm like, I've known this man now for 25 years.
Right.
And his energy has not subsided one bit. In fact, he's gotten only more energetic. And so, you know, for someone who will turn 81 in only a few days.
Oh, wow.
That's quite extraordinary. So I've been incredibly privileged to call Eric von Däniken not only my peer, but also my mentor and a very close friend. And, you know, he's been very generous with his time, and the knowledge that that man has in his head is, beyond comparison.
That's incredible. I can't even imagine what it would be like to work with somebody on his level. So that's just incredible that you have that connection and that relationship with him. So, you know, Ancient Aliens, the show, has been running for several years now. Giorgio, are there any theories that have evolved since the beginning of the show, you know, with what you thought back in season one as research continues to be completed? Have any of the theories kind of shifted their viewpoint or had a paradigm shift at all?
Absolutely. And, you know, I can't speak for anyone else. However, what I can say for myself is that I was always, and still to this day, am a nuts and bolts technology type of guy. However, I always was under the impression, or I was always under this notion that space travel would happen, you know, with generation type starships, and that it would take a long time to reach different star systems and things like that with quote unquote the technologies that we are familiar with today. And I always thought that perhaps portal technology is way too complicated. But, you know, with all the advancements that we are ourselves witnessing right here on the planet with quantum physics and all the things that they are discovering worldwide, especially with the CERN over in Geneva, Switzerland,
right,
and things like that, I actually now am of the conviction that portal technology is possible, not just, you know, for, you know, other species, but perhaps for ourselves in 1,000 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, you know, we are definitely in the footsteps, or in the you know, little footsteps away of uncovering amazing discoveries.
Right. And so when you say portal technology, you're basically talking about like wormholes, correct?
Yes. And, right, you know, and that, you know, we know that wormholes exist. The only problem is that at this point, our civilization or our species, we have no way or no machine with which to sustain or stabilize a wormhole. But imagine if a species is able to stabilize or has the technology with which to stabilize or even deliberately create a wormhole.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're familiar with these things from, you know, Star Trek or from different science fiction movies and stories and things like that. But I always thought that perhaps science fiction will lead us to what we're actually discovering. And we see this all the time with people who in the 60s or 70s, they were inspired by bones on Star Trek that later made them become doctors.
Right.
You know, so it's all this inspiration for ideas that maybe originated in fantasy, like a tricorder on Star Trek. Today, we're all walking around with our tricorders,
right,
the smartphone. You know, so these were all at some point, quote unquote, fantasies. But look where we are. So what if this all translates into technology with which we'll be able to travel to the stars as well at some point?
Well, and technology evolves at such a rapid pace. You know, I work in technology with my day job, and what was relevant a year ago is just old news now, you know? So, I mean, with how fast things develop and grow.
It's exponentially, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's wild. It really is.
I think, you know, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, this conversation will foreshadow some insane technologies that haven't even been thought of yet or conceptualized. So, I think you're right on the money there. To shift focus, Giorgio, Vera Kocha is a recurring character on the show Ancient Aliens, and rightfully so. And I find, you know, Vera Kocha is a very interesting South American figure. And we find droves of evidence of him being the bringer of civilization to many Central and Southern American societies. So based on your research, can you share with us your views on Vera Kocha? Who was he? What was his presence in South America? And what is his relation to the ancient astronaut theory?
Vera Kocha is one of the main deities in South America. He is also known in other parts of Central America and Mexico, otherwise known as Kukulcan and Quetzalcoatl. And Vera Kocha, all those three are essentially the same deity. And the reason why I'm saying this is because in all three aspects of in all three of these cultures, he is depicted in the same fashion, and that is as a plumed or a winged serpent, meaning he flies across the sky. So the reason why he is a prominent figure in the ancient astronaut theory is because we contend that our ancestors were as smart as we are today. It had nothing to do with intellectual capability, but everything to do with technological understanding capabilities, meaning that our ancestors were perfectly aware that snakes or serpents didn't fly across the sky. So then why are there stories of exactly that, that there was this deity that appeared in the form of a giant snake and it flew across the sky? Well, since they knew that snakes don't fly, the fact that they described something that's up in the air that looked like a snake, we are suggesting that they misinterpreted nuts and bolts technologies, that they misinterpret as deities instead of machines, because they didn't know that what they were looking at are actual flying machines. Because if you look at a plane today flying across the sky and you don't have the vocabulary with which to describe that, well, aren't you perhaps looking at a snake up in the sky?
That's right.
You know, especially if you have a contrail behind it, and after a while when the winds take over, that trail then snakes itself across the sky. So these are all interpretations that we are now looking from a modern perspective with the question, could it be that our ancestors were visited by extraterrestrials because they described such advanced technologies?
Right.
Especially, you know, in aviation, for example, in like what we have with Kukulcan or Vera Kocha. And what's fascinating with Vera Kocha or Kukulcan or all these different renditions, Quetzalcoatl, is that they describe, or it's described how that deity imparted knowledge upon the people, such as, you know, astronomy and engineering, agriculture, all those different things. And it was basically just a culture-bringing mission. And this happened worldwide, because there are not only stories of the winged deities arriving in Central and South America, but also, for example, in ancient Sumeria, we have these dragon-like beings that have descended from the sky on snakes or with snakes. Or in China, we have the dragon-like beings. So we have weird snakes or reptile-looking flight objects that descend from the sky and then imparted or jump-started civilization in different parts of the world.
You know, I always think it's interesting that when you have just one instance of something in history, right? Like if Viracocha was confined to just Peru, that could be rather simple to discredit as coincidence. However, when you find instances or examples of this stuff all across the ancient world, and if you subscribe to the diffusionist belief of, you know, transoceanic contact in the ancient world, I mean, it becomes harder to discredit the fact that it's everywhere in antiquity. So I find that very interesting. With regards to Viracocha, though, do you connect him to the Nazca lines?
That is possible. Look, here's the curious thing. None of my colleagues, as far as I know, but what the colleagues I'm referring to is Eric von Daniken, David Childress, Zachariah Sitchin, you know, none of us ever, we've never said that the Nazca lines were landing strips or, were used where Viracocha, for example, could land, you know, that those lines or those things were created in a runway type fashion so that Viracocha could land in his craft or something like this. We never said something like that. It's just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so what happened is that we think that, yes, some type of extraterrestrial activity did take place at Nazca that the natives witnessed and watched from afar. Because my colleague Eric von Daniken always says, for example, that he thinks that some type of a rover landed at Nazca and left behind, you know, after conducting some drillings and core sampling and, you know, just the collecting of some ground samples, that by doing so, the robot or the rover, just like on Mars, would leave behind these tracks. And then the rover would leave again, and the natives would see this stuff, and they would say, holy crap, we were just visited by a deity, by God, or something like this, because the thing came descended from the sky. So then what they did is they saw what this rover left behind, and they basically just expanded upon that and then started to add figures such as the spider and the different figures of animals alongside the lines and the things that look like runways, but they never were runways. So, you know, so this is how the whole Viracocha thing may fit into the whole picture, because Viracocha is said to have come and descended from the sky. But the idea that Viracocha actually used one of those Nazca lines to land, it's impossible, because anyone who has been at Nazca knows that just by looking at them, it's pure sand. Right. So if anything would land there, it would sink, or it would definitely leave behind a different type of signature. And that's what's so fascinating about the Nazca lines, because he can't just go there and, you know, with a shovel, create these lines. There's something else to it.
Right. Right. And I think that the ancient peoples, you know, after what you said, they're emulating what they saw with the rover theory, for example. You know, the spider has a direct connection with Orion and Sirius. So there's also evidence of them having knowledge of advanced technologies or understandings of the inner workings of the universe that could also be that could have been given to them by Viracocha, correct?
It's so awesome that you mention these constellations, because guess what? And obviously, you know, I know I'm preaching to the choir with you, and obviously also to many of our listeners right now. But here's the thing. Why is it? See, it would be a different thing, and this ties into something that we said earlier. If this whole idea, or that this, you know, that there's a constellation within the spider that refers to the Sirius or to Orion, or, you know, any of these lines, there's no question that they refer to these two constellations up in the sky. However, if that would only be restricted to Nazca, one could once again say, well, this is just a one-time occurrence. Mm-hmm. But there are hundreds of examples worldwide of monuments that were created specifically referencing Sirius, Orion, and also the Pleiades from time to time.
Right.
So my question is, could it be that this is a calling card of letting us know where they came from? Mm-hmm. And I think that that is a way more logical explanation than any other explanation. So I don't know why it's so insulting to, you know, think of the idea, holy crap, we've been visited. I think it's great.
Right. Well, and it's so sad because the uniformitarian view of academia just is so against anything that we already, quote unquote, know to be true. I mean, because master's degrees and doctorates were handed out for how long based on that data. So all of a sudden, we're just going to accept the possibility of something else. And they say no. And I think it's sad. It's ignorant. And it's just it's unfortunate that we have such a closed minded community when all is this possible, right?
Right. And see, here's what I think, that in the 60s and 70s, and this is something I've been observing now for a while, in the 60s, or let's say 50s and in the 60s, and especially in the late 50s, early 60s, you'd be very hard-pressed in academia or in the circles of astronomers to find anyone that would publicly or enthusiastically discuss intelligent life in the universe. Mm-hmm. In fact, there were only a few that, you know, risked their reputation to talk about these things. And, you know, one of them became very famous, Carl Sagan, and also Frank Drake. And all those guys, you've got the Frank Drake with the Frank Drake equation, mm-hmm. which calculated the probability of intelligent life in the universe. Those were all solitary figures at the time. Now, fast forward to today, and you'd be very hard-pressed to find any astronomer suggesting that there is no life in the universe, right, or in the galaxy. So everybody sort of now agrees that, yeah, sure, life exists, and perhaps, you know, we wouldn't be surprised if it's intelligent. And while we're at it, life is probably teeming in the universe. However, here now is the difference, what has still not changed between the 60s now and I think the next 5 or 10 years, or perhaps, who knows, maybe 20 years, I don't know. But the one taboo subject now that still remains, because now everybody agrees, all right, the universe is full of life, but the one thing that science is still disagreeing upon, and I think they will be on board, like I said, in the next, hopefully, 10 years or so,
sure.
They will say, the question now is, why is it still taboo to discuss that they were actually here?
Right.
This is so odd to me, because if now everybody agrees that they exist, that means perhaps that some other civilizations are older than ours, mm-hmm. which would imply, or the probability of them having come to us, mm-hmm. is there. And so, to me, it's just very odd why they're still holding out on that possibility.
Yeah.
But I think that things will change.
I think you're right, and I hope so. You know, I mean, more people are coming from an academic background or a scholarly background, and they're more open to different ideas, not just ancient astronauts, but, you know, lost civilizations or society and civilization dating back much further than we originally thought. You know, for the longest time, Mesopotamia is the cradle of civilization. But now we know that Göbekli Tepe predates Mesopotamia by thousands and thousands of years, right? So as stuff continues to get older and we continue to find, you know, very advanced understandings of the universe and mathematics and architecture, so on and so forth, I agree with you. I think that people will start to have a paradigm shift with regards to the way they view these types of theories. One thing that I want to pick your brain on, Giorgio, I find it so fascinating, and we've talked about it a little bit today, that we have so many similarities between ancient cultures and so many ancient cultures that are separated by massive expanses of ocean, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, like the pyramids at Teotihuacan, these pyramids are built in an identical layout, and you know, Robert Bovall feels that the Giza pyramids emulate Orion, so here's another connection there. But Teotihuacan has a similar layout, and the base perimeter of these pyramids is also similar to that of Giza. How do you explain, with your research and your understanding of the ancient astronaut theory, the transoceanic contact that took place here between these two megalithic sites?
So the ancient astronaut theory that I represent, along with Eric von Däniken in this case, would propose that this transoceanic contact happened through contact, through extraterrestrial contact between different continents, mm-hmm. meaning that, because you're right, there are these eerie, spooky similarities that sometimes are not just similar, but they're identical. For example, there's a masonry style that we're all very familiar with in Peru that is attributed to the Incas, but some have suggested that it's actually a pre-Inca style of building walls with these big, gigantic megalithic blocks where you can't even put a dollar bill in between the fittings. And they fit together like perfect puzzle pieces without any mortar, truly amazing stuff, and sometimes with really, really hard rocks such as andesite, mm-hmm. which is very hard to cut.
Right.
Now, we have the exact same masonry style on the Giza Plateau at the Sphinx Temple, but also on one that we know of that we can still see today, a Easter Island statue platform on Easter Island. So oh, wow. There we have three different places on the planet that are apart by thousands and thousands of miles with identical building styles. And what we are suggesting is that, so the question is, how did they find out? Either they all went to the same school or they were visited by the same teachers. And what we are suggesting is that they were all visited by the same teachers. Mm. And this therefore means that the ancient astronaut theory applies to any and all continent around the world. You know, it's not just Central and South America that were visited by ancient astronauts. It was also Europe. It was Australia. Everywhere, the entire planet mm-hmm. was, quote-unquote, colonized, but culture was brought all around the world by extraterrestrials mm-hmm. at some point.
Right.
It's always, I have to really mention this, that we're always accused of, well, how come, ancient Greece, how come nobody says that the Parthenon was built by aliens? You know, how come the Greeks were able to do this? Hello, nobody has looked at the Greek Parthenon, the Greek pantheon of gods? What do you think those were? Of course, they were also flesh and blood extraterrestrials. Mm-hmm. So yes, also ancient Greece was visited by ETs. So this idea that we're only saying, people of Africa and South America were visited by ETs and only they had help is nonsensical. The ancient astronaut theory suggests that any and all of our ancient cultures were something where we can see something that completely surpassed their technological capabilities, that they were given the engineering knowledge or perhaps even the technology with which to build these things. And none of this ancient stuff, including the pyramids, were built by aliens. It was us under their tutelage.
Interesting. And, there's so many theories as to, how the pyramids are built, and I feel like that's a big point of contention. And, I frequent a lot of websites and whatnot, and, you'll read that, well, aliens built the pyramids, but I like how you're saying that they brought us the technology, they brought us the skill sets by which to actually set out and create these monuments. I find that very fascinating.
And the reason why I'm suggesting this is very simple, because any scientist, as far as I know, would have to agree that with any sophisticated project, there has to be an evolution in technology, an evolution in engineering knowledge, an evolution in knowing how to build stuff. Mm-hmm. And if one were to you know, look at the pyramid, I've recently met someone who honestly told me that, you know, building the Great Pyramid is actually not that difficult. It's just a couple of rocks that you put together or that you throw on top of a pile. Now, that's a scientist who told me this. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't care what anyone says, but the discussion is over right there and then, because if you try to tell me that the Great Pyramid of Giza is an easier project than, let's say, the Parthenon in Athens, mm-hmm. then I don't know what to tell you, mm-hmm. because your mind is already made up. There's right. nothing I can say that will change your mind that the pyramid is an infinitely more difficult engineering project than the Parthenon ever was. Mm-hmm. And I'm not in any way, shape, or form disparaging the engineering knowledge of the Parthenon. It's magnificent too, but they're like apples and oranges. In fact, one is a fruit and one is a vegetable. They're not even the same, you know, food category.
Right, right. Well said.
And that is why many of these discussions are non-starters, because people's minds are made up, and you know, if people think that they're like, you know, someone said that I lied about andesite being at Pumapunku, and you know, now people believe, or some people believe, that there is no andesite at Pumapunku, but you know, I will go to my grave and people know that it's true that a great portion of the stones at Pumapunku are in fact made out of gray andesite.
Right.
It's the gray stone you see. So,
well, and bizarre. You know, on top of that, like you said, people already have their mind made up and they're just so closed-minded. Regardless of andesite, go to Pumapunku and watch what happens to your compass when you take that around the stones, right? I mean, like, there are so many yeah. anomalies that people just, they're throwing the proverbial baby out with the bathwater, and it's just, how sad that we're so closed-minded as a species, you know? It's just, it's unfortunate.
No, and the thing is, you know, what I always find fascinating is that, you know, how people say that this somehow undermines human ingenuity. And does it really? Because, you know, none of us are who we are as people, you know, as adults. We wouldn't be who we are today, each of us. Or let me rephrase this. All of us are, let's say you're an adult, and it doesn't matter if you're 25 or 35 or 65 or whatever, but we are all who we are today because of our parents, because of our kindergarten teachers, because of our high school teachers, and then perhaps our university professors, mm-hmm. and things like that, meaning that our entire lives, with the first second that our eyes opened, we've been exposed to one thing. To advice, to teachers, to telling us how things work, how it's done, how we walk, how to dial the phone, how to start speaking, blah, 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 all those different things. So we've all, you know, our entire lives been exposed to teachers. Mm-hmm. So this idea or this fear that, you know, the ancient astronaut theory in some way, shape, or form insults our human ingenuity because at some point in our past, we've had help from elsewhere. I don't get it. Explain it to me. What's so insulting? I don't get it.
I don't either. I mean, I think it adds like a whole nother level of achievement for our ancestors.
Yes.
We're basically saying there's a missing chapter here, people. And if we're willing to just discuss this and talk about the possibility that this happened, look at the achievements of our ancestors. It's insane. So, well said. Georgia, are there any sites that have not really been the focus of your shows, being ancient aliens and then In Search of Aliens, that you think warrant more attention or more investigation?
My gosh, that's a great question. And, you know, there are now, with these new breakthroughs in technology, like ground-penetrating radar and satellite imaging and all that stuff, you know, I personally always have to go back to Pumapunku because it's such an awesome place. And because of these technologies, Only in the last 18 months, they've discovered new and massive blocks of stone that are still hidden underground. So I would go back to Pumapunku for an episode and just do an update on that. But, you know, there are other things. For example, I think for this season, we've sent someone to Gunung Padang in Indonesia, in Jawa, to find out about this place that Andy Collins is talking about, mm-hmm. and Graham Hancock and Hugh Newman, because that's a place that apparently goes back at least 8,000 to 10,000 years.
Right.
And, you know, these are all incredible things, especially because what you mentioned just earlier a little bit, that when these, it seems that when these discoveries are happening these days, stuff keeps getting older.
Right.
And that is awesome because, you know, just the other day, I was in Australia and I was actually able to see an actual skeleton of the Hobbit, the Homo floresiensis. And it's amazing to look at that thing. It's an actual human being. Just it reaches, you know, barely to your hip. And wow. People before said, oh, you know, these stories of short statured people, they're all just legends and myths and things like that. And boom, proven. And also, you know, the thing goes back further in time than what we've been, you know, what we're familiar with.
Right.
So we live on an amazing planet. Stuff that has yet to be discovered will be uncovered. And, you know, I think, you know, I say this all the time, we live in very exciting times.
We really do. And I'm so glad that you brought up Gunung Padang. That is such an important archaeological site right now. And everything that's happening with the government trying to shut down those excavations is just unreal. So for all of our listeners out there right now, there do exist several petitions that you can get involved with online. Your signature does matter. Please hop online and find that petition. I'll make sure that I put a link in the comments below. But find that and sign that, because you can make a difference. There is a chapter of our history missing, and the government over there is trying to make sure that we don't uncover what it is. So
yeah, no, I totally concur what you've just said. Please go and sign all those petitions. And, you know, regarding Gunung Padang, look up on Google and look at some of those statues, because they're really odd looking. And they're very reminiscent of the Easter Island statues and other statues around the world with the same features. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting, especially now that, you know, why are these efforts being made to have this stuff covered up? Because if I were them, I would encourage this not only for archaeology, but especially because of tourism.
Right.
Because this type of stuff brings people, which is great, because, you know, tourism has turned places around, mm-hmm. and often for the good.
Right. Well said. I mean, that's happening in Honduras right now with the discovery of, what is it, the Palace of the White Monkey, I believe. I mean, so that you're right on the money there. All right. So I have a question for you from one of our listeners. Max Goodman wrote in, and he wants to know, Giorgio, if there's been any developments on deciphering what was on the Roswell Stone and also the identical images found in the crop circles.
As far as I know, no new developments have been made, but, you know, never say never. And if anybody has something, I'm always curious. So you can definitely send stuff to my office, and the email is office@legendarytimes.com.
Awesome. So season 9 of Ancient Aliens is coming this May, and I know there was some churning in the rumor mill online about what was happening with history and the show, and it's good to know that that's all been cleared up. Anything that you can share with us about the new season, new evidence that you're willing to give us some teasers for, maybe some new theories, any new contributors? What can you tell
sure.
us?
Absolutely. And, you know, just off the bat, apparently it's not season 9, but it's apparently season 11. So,
all right. You know,
yeah. I had no idea. But, you know, sometimes I guess history didn't count the way that we count our seasons. But regardless, we are now well over 100 episodes. with the conclusion of this production season or this cycle of production, we'll actually have 116 episodes with Ancient Aliens, so 116 hours.
Congratulations.
And, you know, it's the little engine that could, and we're all very excited about it. And, you know, we cannot, or I cannot fail to mention the fans and thank them for this, because the only reason why Ancient Aliens has stayed on the air for this long is because of you guys, let's be honest. People who ask the intelligent questions, who latch on to an impossible idea and to think or to evaluate it whether or not it's possible. Mm-hmm. Because even I look at a lot of these things with a grain of salt, because, you know, some of these things even to me are incredible. And so that's what I was saying to you earlier, that through Ancient Aliens, I too have changed my mind on a whole bunch of things, which I think is incredibly positive. And Ancient Aliens has not disappeared. What has happened is that H2, the channel, has gone away. Mm-hmm. They've rebranded it. And because Ancient Aliens is successful, it actually has returned to the History Channel. And new episodes will premiere this coming May 2016.
Fantastic. Are you able to give us kind of any teasers about some stuff you're going to talk about, or is that all under lock and key?
No. I can definitely tell you that there are some things that I'm really excited about, and that is, like I said earlier in the interview, I said to you that I was just in Australia a couple of weeks ago, and the reason why we went down there is before Ancient Aliens. And we went to explore the Egyptian hieroglyphs that allegedly exist about an hour or two north of Sydney in an area called Kareong. Mm-hmm. And I've been there, I saw them, and all I can tell you is you need to tune in to find out what it is all about.
Awesome.
So that's one of those. That's one topic. And the other topic, I was just up in Northern California at the Hat Creek Observatory outside of Burney, California, which is one where the Allen Telescope Array is situated, which is one of the best SETI research projects currently on Earth. And that is where one of the Microsoft founders put his money, and they created a whole bunch of little telescopes with which they can listen to the sky. And for that interview, I had the great privilege of meeting Dr. Seth Shostak, who is one of 12 SETI scientists in the world. And so the information download with him that we've had was extraordinary.
That's incredible. I can't wait. So lastly, Giorgio, how can people follow you and follow your work and connect with you online? I mean, I know the show is obviously a huge resource for people who are curious and interested in the theories, but when you're not releasing new material through History, how can we stay up to speed with all things Giorgio and all things Ancient Astronauts?
Yeah, so the best way where you can look at my events or upcoming events or my latest thoughts and things like that would be my Twitter and Facebook pages. Twitter is just @Tsoukalos, that's T-S-O-U-K-A-L-O-S. And then on Facebook, it's Facebook/ Giorgio Tsoukalos Fans. And then there's also a website that I have. It's legendarytimesbooks.com, mm-hmm. which is my online bookstore, where all the products and books that are offered on this site have been vetted and read by me, and they're all in reference to the Ancient Astronaut Theory. And yes, it's an old-school bookstore where we actually offer physical books.
That's awesome. That is very cool. Well, Giorgio, I can't even tell you how much I've enjoyed this conversation. I know our listeners absolutely enjoyed hearing us talk. Thank you so much. I know you're very busy, so thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today. We really do appreciate it.
Of course. Any time. It was my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on.
Very good. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's episode of Lost Origins. I hope that you enjoyed everything that we discussed about today. Make sure that you hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode or an article from your friends here at Lost Origins. Make sure that you guys tune in next week. Next week, we are going to be chatting with Dr. Tudor Parfit about his theories surrounding the lost tribes of Israel. There's some very fascinating stuff. You're definitely going to want to tune in for that one. But until then, I'm your host, Andrew, and I want you all to continue to question everything.